www.tvcity.org.
From Television City in Hollywood.
Boy, the way Glenn Miller played.
Songs that made the hit parade.
Guys like us, we had it made. Those were the days.
That, of course, the iconic opening of one of television's greatest shows, All in the Family, produced by the legendary Norman Lear, whose remarkable life and career are chronicled in a brand new book called Norman Lear, His Life and Times. We are happy to be joined by the author of the book, Trip Wetzel. Trip, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me here. I'm delighted to be here.
Boy, Norman Lear is such a huge figure in the history of American entertainment and beyond, of course, television. Is there anybody, in your estimation, that has had a bigger impact on television than Norman Lear?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a loaded question, but certainly in terms of, you know, the sitcom business and changing the direction of television from what it was before Norman Lear's shows came on the air to what it became, you know, he was certainly a game changer.
And in that regard. And this is a guy who was writing for hit TV shows in the early 50s and still involved in television well into the 21st century with the success of the reboot of One Day at a Time. He left an enormous mark out there in the industry. But let's talk a little bit about the background. He had, to say the least, a pretty challenging childhood. How did those childhood experiences shape the person he became and his views of the world?
Well, you know, he did have a very hard childhood. His father, as you probably know, as I talk about in the book, went to prison when he was 9 years old for selling fake securities. That had a searing impact on him. Sort of hearing a gentleman on the radio by the name of Father Charles Coughlin, who was known as the father of hate radio, a very Semitic priest, but he was also a very, very biased guy. Those two things really seared his life forever. I mean, in terms of, you know, his father going away to prison when he was 9 years old and hearing this anti-Semitic rhetoric. The latter of that, of which I think helped form his social consciousness, a lot of it, being Jewish in America in the 1930s and 40s. Where on the other hand, you know, his father is going away to prison, as difficult as that was, it also helped him discover a sense of humor as a coping mechanism, something he often described as finding the foolishness of the human condition. When his father went away, his mother was selling their furniture in Chelsea, Massachusetts, because they were going to be moving on the night of his arrest, and some gentleman came up to him, some family member, and said, Norman was 9 years old at the time, and said, Norman, well, I guess you're the man of the house now. And that moment, he says, was when he discovered the foolishness of the human condition. And by that, I mean that you could find humor in just about anything if you look for it hard enough.
He grew up, served in the military during World War II. And can you explain how he ended up becoming a writer for the most successful comedy duo of the early 50s, Martin and Lewis?
Well, long story short, he was partners with a guy by the name of Ed Simmons, who was the executive producer and head writer for the Carol Burnett Show. He was going to do that. They were comedy writing partners. They had written a bit for Danny Thomas, who was the most successful nightclub entertainer at the time in America, and were recruited to go to work for the Jack Haley Ford Star Review, which was a new variety show on CBS or NBC rather. That was with the frontman Jack Haley, which was not successful, but Jerry Lewis saw one of their sketches and recruited them to work on that show. That's kind of the Cliff Notes version for radio. I mean, I could go on longer. I won't.
Well, he, after that, went on eventually to producing and writing films for Sinatra, Come Blow Your Horn, The Night They Raided Minsky's, and things were going pretty well for him in that industry. But were there any indications throughout the 50s and 60s of what he might eventually become in the industry?
I don't think so. I mean, he had a very successful run, first as a comedy writer in the golden age of variety shows, beginning with Jack Haley, then for Martin Lewis, and as well as Martha Ray and George Goble and Tennessee Ernie Ford. Then in 1959, he formed Tandem Productions with Bud Yorkin, who had been a stage manager on the Colgate Comedy Hour, and was also writing a big rest of big crest of success on for having produced the Fred Astaire special, which is a huge, huge phenomenal TV special starring dancer Fred Astaire in 1958 that was won all the major awards. And from there, they decided to form this production company, Tanner Productions, with the idea of getting actually into the sitcom business for various reasons. But and it turns out they were doing feature films. And, I mean, yes, I mean, I think it was kind of a foregone conclusion they were going to be very successful. But they didn't know what they were going to be doing in television. Certainly Norman at that point didn't know, you know, what he was going to be doing in television with these game-changing shows. In fact, when he wrote All in the Family, what became the pilot for All in the Family, you know, he wasn't even looking to change television. He just wrote a funny show, and that's kind of how it happened serendipitously because he was in the right place at the right time with the right product.
Well, yeah, and came along right after CBS had what became known as the Rural Purge. I think it was Pat Buttram who said they canceled everything with a tree in it.
Yes, that's correct. Mr. Haney from Green Acres said that.
But All in the Family was not a show that the networks were clamoring to put on the air. It took a while to convince CBS eventually to go with it.
Well, you know, they were looking to do it. He had two pilots on the air he had sold to ABC that would become the first episode of All in the Family. But ABC ultimately passed on them, and they were looking to, CBS was looking to, shed their image as being the Hillbilly Network. So they bought All in the Family, what became All in the Family, as a mid-season replacement in 1970. It followed Green Acres, oddly enough, on January 12, 1971. But you're right; they were very nervous about the show. I mean, and initially, CBS did not want to air that first episode, Meet the Bunkers, which was the original pilot that Norman had shot for ABC twice. But Norman stood his ground, feeling that, you know, if we don't stand our ground, if I acquiesce to this, I'm going to be, you know, caving into every other battle, and I just can't do that. So he had, you know, we have to get wet. You can't get wetter than wet. You have to get all wet at once, meaning that every, you know, you have to lay Archie threadbare and all of his prejudices and everything like that, which is precisely what that first show did. And, you know, it took a while for it to find an audience. Bill Paley, who, of course, is the illustrious chairman and founder of CBS, told, you know, he had qualms about it at first. He thought it was vulgar. It had a real champion in Fred Silverman, who was the young programming executive who would go on to become president of all three networks, the only television executive ever to do so in television history. And Robert Wood, who was the president of CBS at the time, really wanted to take this risk. But again, it was a calculated risk, but it was a careful risk because they were also very nervous about it. Although, you know, it proved not to be needed because during the first 13 episodes, you know, not many people were watching. What Norman had in his back pocket was that he had a three-picture deal at the time with United Artists, number one, and number two. He had a commitment from CBS for 13 first-run episodes and 13 repeats. And so that's what really got him going, you know.
Well, and from the success of All in the Family, an incredible run with Sanford and Son on NBC, Maude, which was one of the first spinoffs of an already successful show, and then on to The Jeffersons, Good Times, One Day at a Time, and all of them presenting different pictures of American life that had not been seen on network television before.
Yes, I often like to say they gave underrepresented members of the society their first ever fine voice. But these shows, you know, you could watch somebody who was like you, whether it was the Jeffersons or Maud Finley or Mike Stivic or Edith Bunker or even Archie Bunker. You know, everyone could relate to these people, you know, somehow.
We're talking with Trip Wetzel about his new book, Norman Lear, His Life and Times, and he had to go head-to-head with some pretty big personalities along the way, people like Carol O'Connor, Louise Lasser, B. Arthur. How did he handle those sometimes challenging situations?
Well, it was, you know, he and Carol O'Connor, it's been well-documented, is documented in my book and elsewhere. They had some definite creative challenges. I mean, Carol O'Connor challenged him on everything. He took him to the mat on basically every script. But it was all for the better. But I think in the end they came to appreciate one another. You know, as the years gone past, even though there was a lot of friction at the time between them. Bea Arthur was Norman's favorite actress I think he ever worked with, hands down. If you say, you know, who was the funniest person you ever worked with, he would always say, that woman. And when he said that woman, you knew who he was talking about immediately. Bea Arthur, they were great friends. And, you know, when he was creating that character, Maud, essentially to be a one-shot deal on NBC, putting up for All in the Family, you know, he bought her on the show, but he couldn't think of anyone else besides Bea Arthur that he wanted for the character. Louise Lasser was sort of a different case. She was just very neurotic, and she was neurotic in real life, too, I have to say. And I interviewed her for the book. She was a very interesting person.
And you talk about as well in the book, it was a fairly interesting relationship between Norman Lear and his producing partner, Bud Yorkin.
Well, yes, it was. I mean, Bud, they came in and they piggybacked off each other's strengths. And Bud was a very, you know, instrumental force in getting All in the Family on the air and some of the other shows, even though he wasn't involved day to day. What I do point out in the book is that sometimes, you know, that, and this is not hearsay, this is, you know, Bud Yorkin's family thought Norman didn't give him enough credit for success, although Norman would always say, you know, his was the horse we rode in on. So, you know, take it that what you may. But it was, they had an interesting partnership. Yes, they did.
Now, at the height of his success, he decided to go in a different direction with the formation of the organization People for the American Way. And as you mentioned, some of the inspiration for that goes back to those early days and hearing the messages from Father Coughlin and others.
Yes, well, that was part of it. You know, Norman always had a deep-seated cult, social conscience, and I think the seeds were sown there. But really, the genesis of People for the American Way was his growing concern about the increasing sway of the political right, the evangelical right, people like Pat Buchanan and Jerry Falwell, who once called Norman the most dangerous man in America. He was very concerned about that. And so this was just a, you know, response to that, really more than anything. But he did, you know, he always had that very deep-seated social conscience, yes.
He would have great success late in life. I mean, in his late 90s with the reboot of One Day at a Time. And Stephen Tobolowsky, who was in that cast, a great friend of our show, was just on yesterday. And he told us a couple of visits ago a wonderful story about Norman Lear. I think it was the episode where Rita Moreno's character they thought was going to die, and it was a pretty intensive shooting, and they decided they were going to have to shoot on Saturday, and it happened to be during Rosh Hashanah. And they asked Stephen, would you be okay with working on Rosh Hashanah? And he said, yeah, this is important. I'll do that. And he said, during a break in the shooting, Norman Lear came over to him, took him into a separate room and sat him down and said, what was Rosh Hashanah like for you growing up? And he said they sat there for, I don't know, a half hour or so telling stories about Rosh Hashanah when they were young people. And he said it was, in terms of his faith, it was one of the most memorable celebrations he had, made possible because of Norman Lear.
Wow, that's an amazing story, but not a surprise when I've never heard it, but it's an amazing story.
And so how in the world did he maintain that focus and that energy, you know, all the way to his 100th birthday and beyond? There seemed to be.
Well, I think, you know, he had good genes. He took good care of himself. And he, you know, he was always kept his mind actively engaged. He was always interested in the person with him. And he always made the person. I had a good opportunity, I was able to meet him several times. And I teach a class on him at Emerson College in Boston, where he went to school. And he zoomed in on my class a couple of times. And I also had the pleasure of interviewing him for my last book on the Improv Comedy Club and for the 40th anniversary of TV Guide. And he would always say to you, he would always make you feel like the most important person in the room. And he would say to you, you know, it's taken me a lifetime to get here, but I couldn't be happier. And so I think it was that energy, that curiosity. You know, he was always looking forward to something. He always kept his mind engaged. He always had a million projects going on. I think that has to do with everything. I mean, no moss ever grew on him.
Well, it's a remarkable life and captured so well in your brand new book, Norman Lear, His Life and Times. Trip, we thank you so much for being with us today. Wish you much success with the book, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on. It was my pleasure.
Trip Wetzel, Norman Lear, His Life and Times.